David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 331. I'm your host, Steve Raker, in the comic book bunker, joined once again by my trusty, and sometimes rusty, partners in podcasting, Andrew the L.A. Rabbit out in L.A., and WWX Kevin up in Canada. Good to have you back, guys.
Well, we're never rusty on Indie, Steve.
Thanks.
Always smooth moving.
Thanks for having us, Steve. Kevin, aren't you supposed to guess what Amazing Spider-Man 331 was happening?
Oh, that was with the Punisher, right? I bet you it's the Punisher. And maybe a Venom cameo.
Marvel Noise is a podcast proudly sponsored by nobody, but we are hosted on the Deliberate Noise Network with other fine shows like Comic Book Noise and DC Noise and This Noise and That Noise. And we have a sister show that Andrew mentioned, or... was it Kevin? Oh, it was Kevin mentioned. Indie Comic Book Noise. And you can find new show announcements on our Facebook page and our Twitter. And over on MarvelNoise.com, where you can also find a complete episode archive. Also, item, Baltimore Comic Con. It's their 20th anniversary show this October, 18th to 20th. That's 2019, folks, at the Baltimore Convention Center right there on Pratt Street in the Inner Harbor opposite the Camden Yards and the Raven Stadium and all that. I'll be there with Mike from the After the Ending podcast, and pals Jim Whitting and Ray Lowell will be there with a table even. You know, see Chris Campbell and Hassan and Tom, and it should be a blast. So come join in our fun at the convention with the best comic creator guest list this side of the Mississippi, for sure. And tickets are on sale now.
Interesting.
It's a good show. Now it's the week after New York Comic Con instead of the week before, or the 2 weeks before. So we'll see how that ends up shaking out. The guest list as published so far is already fantastic. So even if there's no more announcements, though there'll be plenty more, it would be a nice solid show.
I'm going to steer the ship to get out there maybe for next year or the year after. I need another fix of the Baltimore show.
Totally. We got to do it. It's fun. All right. So what have you guys been reading? Haven't talked to you guys in... Well, I talked to you, Andrew, when you were giving us the Grand Disney tour. But what have you guys been reading in over vacation and since?
What's reading?
Have you been doing a lot of shows?
I just went to a show. I'm not going to talk about a show, though. You know, if anyone wants to hear about TCAF, they can... this is a constant promo for Indie Noise now.
There you go.
They can listen to Comic Book Noise.
Well, while I've been letting War of Realms stack up, I have been reading non-War of Realms books. I sort of got caught up. I was doing some stuff. And then with these events and the tie-ins, it stacks up kind of quickly. Before you know it, you've got a big stack and you're trying to keep up with the other stuff. But I will dig into War of Realms, but do you guys want to talk some other non-related, non-tie-in titles?
Well, since you mentioned War of Realms, I gotta just say, that's the big event going on right now, right? It's Jason Aaron and Russell Dauterman. They're three issues in, I think. Good-looking art, Adams covers. This is the event that's been, such a long build-up, right, Kevin? I mean, maybe even longer than Secret Invasion.
Secret
Invasion. It's been a long build-up in the Thor
Secret
title.
Secret Invasion.
And it feels lately like the arc has been mega decompressed, too. Almost like they were, stalling for the right time, marketing-wise, really? For the event to hit. I feel like this event should have sort of happened like last year. I mean, it's not even the War of Realms anymore. It's just the War for Earth, like Malekith, where he conquered all of the other realms long ago.
I've heard other people say that it's true that the War of Realms has kind of been taking place almost since the beginning of Eren's run on Thor. So, which is awesome, because then you're not, like, repeating the same story over and over, right? Like, it's a different format since it's been happening for years.
Right. It's been happening since after that first arc, that there was that God Killer arc with the great Asad Ribic painted, pages. And then right after that, there was one of the Q-berts, I think, jumped in, and they did a Malekith story, and that was kind of Malekith getting his legs back under him and starting this whole scheme for taking over all the realms. And each realm, after he conquers it, he takes on some of their army. So now his army is growing bigger and bigger. It's got the fire beings from Surtur's realm. It's got the angels from the Gaiman Angela heaven realm, and the trolls and the dark elves and all that bit. They've conquered everything except for Asgard, which didn't need conquering because Magog devastated it, and Odin sits alone on his throne. The rest of the Asgardians have all taken refuge on Earth, although they're not exactly living like refugees. Say you don't have. You know it. You know how it goes. Anyway, here we are, though. It's finally come to the big event, and my advice, and hearing Andrew talk about all the titles and everything, and if you're reading Thor, continue to read Thor, but otherwise, if you're coming from another angle of the Marvel Universe into this, and this event is all of a sudden hitting your comic book shop, just read the main War of Realms book. The other books are so tertiary in nature, in structure. It's almost like Marvel has heard the complaints of being stuck having to read the tie-ins and stuff, and the pendulum has swung all the other way where, you know, unless you really need to read what's, you know, more specifically what's happening with the Punisher or something, there's really no reason. It'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. Malekith's got a strategy. He's finally enacting it here, but these tie-in books are so relevant, it seems. And some of them have been fun. They've had their moments. But even the creative teams, here and there, there's something that catches my eye. But for the most part, it's just completely unnecessary. So keep that in mind.
I think people over-exaggerated how much the books used to tie in on certain events.
Well, you know, and they confuse crossovers and separate events too, and I think part of that is because marketing wise since the 2000s or so, Marvel has shifted into taking a crossover event or a big event that's happening within a title and turning it into an event book, where now we have these cyclical seasonal events where Marvel sort of always has to have an event that's either right about to come out or is happening. So I think we've lost that interconnection of the titles just crossing over more naturally.
I didn't need any more interconnection with the Infinity Wars, though. That was good that it had less interconnection.
I like the Sleepwalker book.
I almost saw four issues of that, and I said, oh, if I see all four, but I only saw two, so...
Wait, so I wasn't supposed to just buy everything that had War Realms on it?
No, I warned you against that, Andrew.
I'm pretty sure you said, go all in, Andy. If you're going to read one of them, you need to read all of them. I mean, I did miss a few just because I don't get to the shop every week type of thing. So it's kind of like that Spider-Man one where I read about 95% of them. So it'll be interesting to have them all. And it's always fun trying to wrangle out the reading order, too, is going to be interesting. Thank gosh for the internet, because that's my go-to source for trying to figure out what order to read books in now.
I don't think there is a reading order with this one.
Oh, I'm sure some intrepid individual has staked out their claim for which order to read these books in.
Read Thor and read War of Realms. I'm telling you. This is my strong opinion here, folks.
And there's no way I can pass a book up when it has Agents of Atlas on the cover. Like, how am I going to do that?
Have you read it yet?
I have not read it yet.
Did you want a new Agents of Atlas, or did you want to revisit your beloved Agents of Atlas?
Both.
All right. Well, you only get one.
Well, let's go with the new then.
All right. Well, there you go. That book is for you.
That's always the option. If it's like old, new, it's like, hey, do you want to go revisit your past or move forward? It's usually best to pick the move forward one.
I think that's probably smart because most of what I read was backwards looking.
Yeah, I'm
going to
take
I feel like Marvel really is in this age of looking back because first one I wanted to talk about was Symbiote Spider-Man, Greg Land book, which is set back in the Symbiote Spider-Man days.
The looking back era was the era that everyone was looking forward to, the legacy thing. That was the looking back era.
I don't know. This one is set back after the first Secret War, so it's kind of literally set looking back. Yep. I mean, told with the modern Greg Land artwork.
And to your
which cover do you have?
I have the one of black-suited Spider-Man spinning his web at you with Mysterio in the background.
Oh, see, I wasn't going to pick up the first issue, but then I found the Gwen Stacy cover.
And to your point, too, Andrew, they just also had the whole round of annuals that were all set in the past, you know, for each character. So that there is some sort of push for this looking back thing.
Well, there is also an anniversary celebration that they're doing throughout the year.
And you know what? Since they're putting out over 100 titles a month, there's room for all of this and not room for anybody else on the shelf.
Well, also, I get it's nice having a Mysterio book out. I mean, I haven't seen the new Spider-Man movie, but I think it's been well publicized that he's the big bad. So having books with him on the cover, probably, especially set back in time, might be a way to get lapsed readers, you know, interested. Say you kind of washed out in the 90s or whatever, this is a good way to kind of plug in and enjoy a comic book to get you back on track.
Or movie readers.
Yeah. I do feel that, I don't know, Greg Land is always a mixed bag of some stuff works really well and some stuff doesn't work. But
I didn't mind his Mysterio.
No, I was good. His Black Cat, Felicia Hardy, out of her outfit, though.
Yeah.
Has
what?
See, you can't copy Mysterio out of a JCPenney catalog the way you can all his other faces, so.
Yeah, the people out of outfit are the ones that are, I mean, his Peter Parker is fine, I feel like. But the women tend to be almost a carbon copy of each other with different colored hair. But it was just an odd Mysterio story. But what's fascinating about the Mysterio character is there's like so many different Mysterio, like a lot of the legacy villains, they just, you know, it's whatever dude is current, whatever former special effects guy is currently wearing the outfit. But I kind of enjoy Symbiote Spider-Man prior to the understanding of it becoming Venom. I know Venom's the hotness now, and we've talked a lot about it, but there was something fun about that era of, and this is where it's just directly trading on nostalgia. Like, Spider-Man had just changed up his outfit
right.
in a very significant way, and the outfit was kind of cool. It was, like, alive and responded to his thoughts. So I feel, for me, this book works tapping into that era. But if you didn't have that fondness with the era, I wouldn't recommend running out and getting this. Because I feel like Mysterio's kind of made a bit of a buffoon, which is fine, but I more like him as a serious bad guy than as kind of a goofy goof-up sort. But like I said, with my nostalgia factor, that rode me through. Steve, you read this one?
Yeah, I agree with you on every front there. It's fun to remember Spider-Man at that time. You know, this is great. The new suit, what could go wrong, you know? But this feels like it's a collection for someone to check out digitally or when they're interested in Mysterio stuff when the movie hits.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally smart to have that ready, but nothing great. I also picked up, I'm just going to be looking at new series. I have been continuing to read some of the other ones, but that's boring. New stuff, as Kevin said, looks forward. So, looking forward to the hot new character, Thanos. I picked up Thanos number one. Jim Starlin. And no, only joking. It's Teeny Howard and Ariel Olivetti. I was a little, I don't know if either of you gentlemen picked this one up, but I thought the Olivetti, I don't know, normally, I don't know, I felt like it looked different than some of his other work, and I should probably, I guess, check. He's with Antonio Fabella, and I don't know if maybe it's a different colorist he works with. It's not bad, it just didn't ring true, because I think the last time I remember, and I'm sure he's done work in between, but didn't we talk about the Venom Space Knight book, Steve?
Yeah.
And I feel like this looks different to that. Like I said, maybe it's just the colorist, or maybe it's my own eyes or whatever, but this tells the story of how Gamora came to Thanos. And so it's almost her story in a way. In fact, she's narrating it, and it flashes back to the old days of Thanos when he was putting the band together, so to speak. So he has his army, and he has a young Ebony Maw and Proxima Midnight,
boy,
and a few other people. And they're just part of his, like, peasanty crew, and they're going around slaughtering planets.
Yeah.
The insight into Thanos, I don't know if it adds much. Their attempt to characterize him might ring hollow with long-term fans of Thanos, but the part I do like is he's building his army and deciding what to do, so the person he is going against is a classic villain. Do you know who it is, Steve? Do you want me to spoil it?
Sure, go ahead.
It's a Magus, who's assembling his army at that time. So the part I enjoy was Thanos' strategy is to get to the planets before him and kill all the people, because Magus was recruiting people. He would go to their planet and offer everyone a chance to join him or die. So Thanos is trying to deprive him of an army by getting to the planets first and just killing everybody. So that part I like. But this attempt to delve into the psyche of Thanos, I feel, doesn't bring a lot, because some of these villains, I feel the less we look into them, sometimes the better, because you're filling in more of the story in your own head. And when the writer wants to expressly get into things, it's a risk.
Yeah, and selfishly, you know, if I want to read about Thanos' inner mind and workings and stuff, I'm going to read something Starlin wrote. And when other writers are handling Thanos, then I'm on board with your idea of less is more, because the more they reveal, the more they reveal they don't know. This looking back and rebuilding Thanos's past through other writers' visions bothers me. As a Starlin fan, as a Thanos fan, and it's just going back, and you know, it's one of these things. Well, why can't you tell a story of Thanos and Gamora moving forward? Oh, you've ruined both of those characters. All right, that's why. So I'm glad that it's not a next chapter type of story to have to see what they're doing with Thanos now, because it's a looking back type of thing. I'll read it. It's Thanos, but I'm not gonna like it, Andrew.
Wow. Well, you like Magus shows up, and it's a cool strategy. I also feel like that they've decided that now Gamora is way more important to Thanos than I would have given her credit for. So I think, like I said, this could very easily be a Gamora book as it is a Thanos book. And I don't know that tying him to other people is, like I said, it's just a risk. Like, the more you commit hard to something to tie it down, the more you're trying to integrate that with what's come before and laying down what's after. But I guess, what's the point of telling a middling story? But I have no problem with Thanos more as the mysterious back force and seeing all the machinations or the strategy of how he takes on the Magus. Like, that kind of stuff would be more to my like. But Ariel Olivetti, Thanos, number one. All things that led to Andy buying it.
I like Olivetti too.
And speaking of interesting tie-ins, I also picked up Savage Avengers, which is Diodato. Who also has moved a little bit in his look, I feel. But we've talked about that. He's always sort of fine-tuning his work. And it's Jerry Duggan and Frank Martin. And it looks really good. And this is the one where Conan is now part of the Avengers.
He's part of the Avengers, or he's like operating parallel to something that some Avengers are doing?
I think they're going to have him joining the Avengers based on this one. Because this is the beginning of the assemble the team. The team is nowhere near assembled.
Hot like cocoa we... on, you know, sitting in the chairs at the table at the...
No.
Voting on who's going to be the new membership chair and reading the bylaws.
Well, he's not going to like it for the, when the Too Many Avengers shows up and he gets kicked out.
Him and Gilgamesh, the forgotten one.
I was led to believe that it was a marketing title. Like, it wasn't... Like, who knows what the name of the team would actually be. Maybe Thunderbolts or something.
Well, it starts with the... mild spoilers. I guess it's hard to talk. I'm not going to give too much away, but Conan is transported to the modern times in the Savage Land. And this is, like I said, getting the team together, so hardly anyone is together. It's Wolverine and Conan fighting, because it's a Marvel comic, so you got to fight first, while they reach a sort of detente after battling, because, you know, Conan keeps stabbing him and Wolverine keeps not dying. But the big bad here is trying to absorb, use the most famous artists and warriors and all these important people to create a giant sacrifice. To bring Watchmen? This up. Jotalatin Lao, the marrow god. Like, the stars are aligned so he can pull this in. But you have to give a sacrifice of, like, it starts with, like, a famous, the best opera singer. And then the book ends with him sacrificing Dr. Voodoo. Or he's about to. So I don't know whether he kills him. But so he wants to get all these. So presumably, you know, Wolverine. And it ends with him teasing that he wants to get the Punisher. So all these, like, important people murdered so that the energy of it is a good sacrifice to summon the god. Which makes sense. Like, it's a reason to put... I thought Duggan was smart to give a reason to put these disparate characters together. But, and Diodato's nice, but the clear, like, we don't even have half the team assembled by the end of issue one is a signal to Andy that there's no urgency. Like, I'm just going to read this later in some other form. I mean, maybe I'll buy some floppies, but there's no point to me buying this. I mean, look, at this point, it's probably going to take 4 issues to get the team together.
And
that's a fine choice, but
I haven't heard you mention one Avenger yet, though. Like,
Wolverine's else on this an Avenger.
Oh, yeah, all right. Yeah, okay.
Well, the cover has, and again, it's one of those cool covers, but half of them aren't in it. The cover has Venom, Conan, Dr. Voodoo, Punisher, Elektra, Wolverine.
All right, so no Avengers.
So three of them are, well, two of them, basically, so far it's mainly Conan and Wolverine, but Dr. Voodoo comes in at the end, and the Punisher is literally the, like, the tease for next issue. But we haven't even gotten to Venom or Elektra yet. I guess this is kind of like Thunderbolts Volume 2.
What?
So we need Thunderbolt Ross. That's who they should have added to this.
Wow.
It's like
wow.
Bizarre. But don't get me wrong. Like, I enjoyed the story and Diodato having Wolverine and Conan fight and all that stuff. It was fun. There's just no feeling of Andy has to read this monthly or pick up every issue type of thing right away. I don't like that they show you the cover with the whole team, and like I said, I don't see how they're getting this team together in under maybe three issues.
Probably four or five. That What If with Conan and Wolverine during the 90s as well.
I was thinking about that too.
As well as
the earlier two Conan in the modern universe stories from What If that were awesome from the Volume 1. The one that has the Ernie Chan cover and the one that has the Bill Sienkiewicz cover with Conan with holding the gun.
And I like the concept of why they got them together makes sense. It's very Conan to have some sorcerer up to no good that he has to take on. So all that part makes sense, and I like it, and it's fun. It's just there's no urgency to I could read this now or I could read it 5 years from now.
I mean, he's so one of these things doesn't belong with the other. Come on, can you tell which one? That story has to be told as a Conan story. Otherwise, it's not, you know, he's...
I don't know, Steve.
In from a portal out of nowhere, you know?
I don't know. I think Elektra fits. I mean, I don't know why. Well, what I don't like, though, is it's her TV show outfit with the red bandana and the black suit. I much prefer the classical look, especially, you know, we've seen some of these characters. This has a very, also, because it's Diodato, I'm flashing back to our Thunderbolts Dark Avengers coverage.
No, he drew
with
the
Venom.
Diodato, is Venom ripped?
Yeah.
He drew the Elektra series back in the 90s, too.
Yeah. Well, Venom's only on the cover. Like I said, Venom and Elektra, not referenced at all in the book.
Oh, Elektra's black suit, Andrew? It's Venom. Okay. He's been there all along.
So it's getting there. But I also wonder how balancing all these characters, too, because I feel like Conan and Punisher and Wolverine, like three notorious not working with the other people well people. Like, is there anyone on this team that works well with people? Maybe Dr. Voodoo? The rest are all loners?
It's like Marvel Metal. We're going to get our biggest kick-butt guys together.
Well, I thought they could also pitch this more as like a Defenders, where you have one unifier, that would be Dr. Voodoo taking the Doctor Strange, and then a bunch of people who don't play well together. Because that was what the fun part of the first Defenders was. People like Hulk and Silver Surfer and
you're totally right.
Team. And that could be a spirit. And then showing how Dr. Voodoo, with his superior knowledge of the bigger threats, can keep these people all focused and not fighting. But that's not the book this is.
If there wasn't just a Defenders TV show, that's totally what they should have, could have done with this. That would have been cool.
Could have named it Marvel Knights.
Yeah, this lineup, all you need is Black Panther to join the crew, but
and
he's
Daredevil
tied up in his own. Yeah, like I said, it's I enjoyed it. It's fun. I just don't feel like, oh, I gotta go buy this monthly and pay the $5 an issue type of thing, wait for some other trade or unlimited or when they're all in the dollar bin type of thing.
All right. You want some Avengers? You looking for some Avengers? I got Avengers. In my attempt to catch up on all of the titles that I felt like I needed to catch up on before jumping into War of Realms, and since Aaron was writing the Avengers title, I'm like, oh, there might be some key things in there that I need to, you know, it's going to be a seamless transition, right, into the War of Realms from Avengers, which it wasn't really. But I figured I got to catch up on the Avengers book, and I did. Written by Aaron, as I said, with art mostly by Ed McGuinness. And I've said before when we talked about the first arc, I very much enjoyed that, even though it seemed impossibly gratuitous to kill off so many Celestials like that. It's like, no, not my Kirby Celestials. And I dig the current status quo of the book. Their headquarters being a snow-covered, hollowed-out Celestial corpse. Although, it's a little bit Shades of Nowhere, isn't it, Kevin? Like, we're going to use...
It's fine. You know? It's cool.
But we just did that in Guardians, and it seems like...
Like 10 years ago or more?
Well, yeah, Nowhere is not anywhere now, right? So...
Well, it's somewhere. It's nowhere.
And the team here, I'm okay with it, although I admit I have said it before, I like my She-Hulk pretty, and with a more feminine-type physique, because it's not just me being me, it's that that's like part of the dichotomy of the character, I thought, the fun of the character. Meek little Jennifer prefers to be She-Hulk because she wasn't abused as a child like her cousin was, you know? So her gamma persona isn't a tortured man-child monster, but it's like almost the comic book type physique character with the heroic stature that's a fantasy to anyone with a real, you know, physique.
Yeah, fun-loving. Yeah, like having a good time with it. Like you and I, you know, you'd be like, this is awesome, I can lift up a car.
This She-Hulk is more muscle-bound and a bit more Hulkish than I prefer. Granted, it's a preference. And I'm also okay with the car driving, not connected to the previous Ghost Rider's Ghost Rider.
Oh, so good.
Or is he?
So good, Steve.
Or is he connected to the previous Ghost Riders? Because I've admitted all along, I'm not that big of a fan of this iteration of the Ghost Rider, but...
This made me a fan.
Yeah, I'm getting
that's
there.
That's how good it is. He is in this book. This made me a fan.
His inexperience within the Marvel Universe as a whole and his lack of relationships with other characters makes him a good fit for, like, the Kitty Pryde role on the team, you know, who's just stepping in there and, wow, it's like Captain America and Thor. And I think given Aaron's history of the Ghost Rider, Kevin, he's probably... I'm guessing he's on the team, this Ghost Rider, because Aaron's going to give his take on how this character fits in within the Ghost Rider mythos that he already spent so much time ironing out. And I think he did a really good job, too. I enjoyed Aaron's Ghost Rider book with the whole Heaven War and Danny Ketch coming back and sort of infamously.
Yeah, so, I think he has a good handle on all the Ghost Rider stuff.
So I think he's going to fix this Ghost Rider. He already is in a lot of ways. But on this Avengers title, I think the arcs so far really, after the first one, they haven't really been that great to me. The Namor raging arc was just seemed uncharacteristic, and it was really just setting up the Invader series, but more on that in a bit. And then they did a big Vampire War arc.
Yeah,
it had its moments, but overall I felt like it was kind of ho-hum. But
and one of the guys from Agents of Atlas showed up in that one issue.
Yeah, that was cool,
man. Yeah. Oh man.
And now they're into the War of the Realms tie-in, so we'll see after the dust settles there where it goes. I'm hoping it's going to go right into the more of the Ghost Rider stuff, because that is really I'm feeling like that is part of Aaron's focus.
Kevin, well, you mentioned you had read a comic. Which book have you read? I think we have a team-up possibility.
Oh, that's book. Pretty funny, Andrew, considering it's Marvel team-up featuring Spider-Man and Ms. Marvel. It's funny that it's a special flipbook format. You can start reading from either side. So I was wondering if it had different covers, but then I guess I would confuse people, because I remember people back in the day... My back in the day, not traditional back in the day. buying like Marvel Comics Presents, because they had two different covers on like either side type of thing to show the two different stories.
It's important.
So I just read the one that happened to be the first one that I saw, and that ended up being the Spider-Man side.
That's the one I read first, too. I think that's because that's how we're used to That feels like the right... Although you're right. I guess it is identical. I thought there was, for some reason, some giveaway, but there isn't. It is perfectly identical. I started with the Spider-Man one, too. This is the team on this. Although, I guess that is the difference, believe it or not. They list the credits on the Ms. Marvel side on the cover. At least on mine. Eve Ewing... Joey Vasquez.
Oh, yeah. Sorry,
so that's Sabrera, the front.
And they don't. And it's weird. Kevin and I both started with the back.
Yeah, you're right.
Huh. Isn't that a funny? I do like how you point that your back in the day is different from Steve and I. Yeah. Steve and I are always going on about how much we enjoyed buying all those Atlas books off the shelf. Back when comic books were a dime. And you could get...
You know what else was weird when you're reading the Spider-Man part? They have the one ad, or at least in mine, it's upside down.
Yes.
So then I kind of flipped ahead a bit. I'm like, is this book going upside down? Am I supposed to flip over now? And then I look, I'm like, no, it's still the same.
Yes, I felt the same way. And this is where, back to my whole point about I feel like they're trying to trend a little bit on nostalgia by bringing the Marvel team-up title back. But there isn't much... of the Marvel team up to it, except the broadest concept of the two of them. I was not familiar with Vasquez and Sobrero. Were you? Had you? Do you know the art team, Kevin?
No, I didn't. But like, I wasn't distracted or anything by it. Like, I thought it was very solid.
Yeah, a lot of. I thought the coloring was kind of. Like an appeal, a little bit of an appeal to old school, because the I feel like the lots of like good solid coloring and then a lot of textures. I know they're not done with Zip-A-Tone anymore, but you know the Zip-A-Tone button on Photoshop or whatever. So those felt, and that giving you the backgrounds being just a solid color or a Zip-A-Tone or something like that, and the characters being. Sort of the flat coloring. I liked it. Part I liked.
Yeah. Like, it was good. I could see them on, like, the main Amazing Spider-Man title in the future.
Do you think? I thought now they'd want more of the lots of gradients in the color and richer. And this I picture more on, like, having the Unstoppable Wasp team or, like, the newer books, the newer characters with this.
That you know what's funny? This made me think of Unstoppable Wasp.
Huh.
Because at one point, Peter says something like sciencing, and I'm like, that sounds more like something Nadia would say, not, like, I guess I think of Peter as like, older than the newer characters. So that seemed a little too, I'm like, I don't know if he's quite, not hip isn't the word, but it was just a little weird sometimes he would say something like that, and I'd be like, that seems like, too new for him, I guess.
And if you had a different type of art style like that, that's a solid one, like Gary Huru's type style, it would be fun to see the different characters that team up drawn in that style, right? I mean, that was some of the fun of the Ultimate Marvel team up back in the day, that it was like different artists doing it. So you got to see Allred doing Spider-Man for the first time and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I also feel like this art team does a better job with the kids than maybe with the Peter Parker side. As far as out of costume, I think that this is more, the high schoolers look not better, but more portrayed in that. I think you're right. I would have had Peter Parker pitched a little bit older and played that up, because when you have him against the high school students, well, there should be a big difference because he's clearly past high school. And I also thought they could have dropped, I guess you need all that, like, setting which Peter Parker and where in the continuity we are. But I felt we could have scrubbed all that stuff about the plagiarism and having this thing. I don't know. Did you feel about that?
That's the thing, Andrew. Do you want them to be interconnected and reference continuity like it's a universe? Or do you just want it to be straight out a team up and totally, like, quarantined? I don't find it disrupts the story, and I'm like, cool, I can place this in the Marvel Universe.
I thought it was wasted real estate, and I would have preferred they move the story ahead, because I read the first two issues, and we're nowhere near the resolution of this. And part of the fun of the old team-up book was, as Steve said, seeing new characters and seeing new scenarios being thrown together. And if we're going to spend 5 to 6 issues with these two, that's fine, but it's not a team-up book. It's more of a Spider-Man and Miss Marvel book.
So you want it to take place at a different school to jump the whole continuity issue?
Or just to have them flip to, like, it gets resolved in 2 issues, and then Miss Marvel teams up with the Thing or Spider-Man. I just felt that part of the charm of that series was the rotating cast, and that's what made it different. And you can still place a reference to an event or something if you want in it, and they oftentimes would have some throwaway reference to a footnote, like, oh, he's fighting this guy, see this issue, or whatever. And I don't care whether they keep Spider-Man or Miss Marvel. I like both characters. But I just feel making this a 5 to 6 issue arc, especially when the title's going to last, what, 2 arcs, 3 arcs tops, then why don't they just make this like Deadpool Spider? Like, they already have those books, and they could have just made this Spider-Man Miss Marvel and not baked in an expectation that it was going to be a team-up book.
Well, I believe this arc is only 3 issues, and then the creative team changes with 4, and you have a different team-up.
Could be, I hope. But I just feel after 2 issues, well, I feel like I we're not on a pace to get this thing wrapped up.
Well, I feel like it's rolling. Like, we're getting to... Like, there should be some fun shenanigans next issue.
Oh, I like the 2 of them together, but I feel introducing the Marvel team-up name brought to me an expectation, because we know this isn't going to last long. So the idea that we're going to literally get 2 team-ups in the whole length of the series, maybe 3.
It's, you know, funny, I'm the one giving you future previews, but you're the one that knows how long the series is going to last.
Well, I mean, am I wrong? Do you think this is 25 issues? I mean, I just don't see
the last one went 25.
When was the last one?
The Kirkman one?
Yeah, when was that?
15 years ago? 10 years? Yeah. Not 10 years ago. That's got to be 15, right?
Yeah, and I just don't think I think these newer titles aren't cooked to last as long. I mean, I would love, believe me, if it lasts 50, 25, that'd be great. I just feel like the way these new titles last, they just don't run very long. We get about a year out of them, maybe 2. I mean, I'm not talking like Avengers or...
No.
But these kind of ancillary titles, and I'm like, man, I would have liked a couple more team-ups.
I think what's more likely to happen is this would change into something else. Like, there'll be some other team-up or Marvel Comics Presents or whatever in 2 years, and they'll be like, oh, it's better if we just roll it over.
I could see that. And then it'll have a new number one and all the other advantages that brings. But I was just, I don't know. I feel the use of the Marvel team-up name was deliberately trading on that concept. And then we're all adults here. We all know these books don't last. It's not going to be the longest run in the world. So I guess we're just going to get this, teaming up, and then the book ends?
Yeah, I'm totally fine with getting like 6 awesome issues or 6 awesome team-ups or whatever of a series.
I would love like, 6 awesome really, team-ups.
That doesn't that really... It might factor into other people's like calculations, but it doesn't really, it didn't really have anything in my, I wasn't thinking about it at all.
True. Then what led you to buy the title, I guess? Was it the creative team, the characters?
Characters, Marvel team-up, not so much the creators, because it would be weird to say. The thing is, it wasn't a negative. Like, if it's an established creator, they're bringing something to the book, right? But if it's new creators, it's kind of a blank slate. So you're kind of like, how much do I know? Does this seem like I only knew the writer. So that seemed like an all right fit, and the characters, and what I think Marvel Team Up is.
So what do you think Marvel Team Up is?
This is what Marvel Team Up is.
So it's two characters, maybe two team ups over the course of the title.
I don't know.
Or do you think this is going to last a long time?
Yeah, I don't know if he accepts that premise, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's hard for me to say that there would only be two team-ups, because how do I know issue 4 won't be a one-off or something? Like, there's not enough information for me to guess that every arc would be a three-issue arc.
Just, if you're going to make them arcs, if you start a team-up, you better finish it. That's all I'm saying.
They're going to finish it.
I would think they would finish it, yeah. I just was hoping that, I was like, oh, two issues would be cool. Three issues is okay. How long is this arc going to last?
Three issues?
This title's not going to last forever. Please wrap this up.
Not Andrew that I'm not wants, enjoying it. You heard it here first. Andrew wants his title to end after three issues, yes, and be done. He wants it to be a limited series.
He loves his new number ones, but he doesn't want them to last. Just number ones.
I would like some Marvel team-ups that have shorter arcs so that we can get more team-ups.
Shorter than three issues, even though you thought it was going to be five or six.
Yes. So it's the third issue is the last one, is what you're telling me.
Oh, man.
I think also the nature of the book, it being a flip book, and them sort of coming together in the middle of the issue, you kind of can have them teaming up throughout the book, too.
That's funny.
All right. Well, this is where the not previews does bite me in the butt.
I'm not usually a big fan, unless it's referring to stuff that if you've been around long enough or read the stories that you experienced in the past. I'm usually not that big a fan of stories that have two timelines going on in them, and they're jumping back to the past, and while they're telling the story in the future, or in the present, I should say. I mean, Black Hammer does it well, right? Because those characters are all new, you're being exposed to it all for the first time, and it's kind of the linchpin of the story, right? That there's the past and the present stuff happening. But I prefer stories, like you were saying before, Kevin, that move forward rather than delve too much into the past, because most of the time they're rewriting the past in those flashback sequences. And with these characters, with the invaders, the World War II invaders, it's just too tempting to do, because, you know, they existed in the past, so then that must be where their story is. And we have five issues so far of a new Invaders series written by Chip Zdarsky, with art by Carlos Magno and Butch Geis. This is really a continuation of the Namor arc that started over in Jason Aaron's Avengers book. There's tensions just really building between the surface world and Namor, and even his old closest friends from the surface world, the invaders. He's totally dissing them. You know, we've had these moments of Namor's history. Fantastic Four, number 4, where the Torch, you know, finds him in the Bowery and brings him back, burns off his beard with the flame, right? Give him a shave. Rich Buckler's Saga of the Submariner, which I think it was Roy Thomas. I could be wrong on that, but I know it was Buckler art, that miniseries in the 80s that went back and tried to piece together Namor's history. There was the moment of Burns' Namor series in the 90s or late 80s, it might have started, with the whole explanation of his being a villain at times and raging on the surface world as being related to an oxygen toxicity, a chemical imbalance that Reed was able to help him with. And Byrne also did the bit of Namor being Marvel's first mutant, but not because he's a hybrid. You know, the two races, Atlanteans and humans, mix. That doesn't make a mutant, that makes a hybrid. But his mutation is those little wings on his feet. That's the mutation.
I think Butch Geist does a great job on the art with this Invaders.
He does. It's that Steve Epting, Butch Geist, Mike Perkins. They do an awesome job on Namors and Caps and Buckies and original Human Torches. All the Invaders we know and love. The first three issues of the series have lots of muscle flexing and posturing, really trying to lay down how dedicated to this new characterization Namor really is. He's ready to go to war with the surface world. He kills some Roxxon oil rig personnel, then that's what sends all of this into motion. He's going to wage war. He's even building a water-to-surface missiles that will kill humans, but not Atlanteans. So this is all going down big, and it's really is Namor's story. This going back, and they're telling these past sequences to show Namor's connection to this vet that he knew and Captain America knew in World War II, and then how after the war he was friends with that vet and his family and stuff. And then it's like, uh-oh, here comes Secret History of Namor time, you know? See, it was explained in 1968's Submariner number 1 of his long-running solo series in the 60s and 70s that a villain named Destine messed with Namor's mind at the end of the war, and that's how he went into his, you know, being like a homeless dude and losing his memories and stuff. But in issue 4 of this Invaders series, they say that he, during that time, subconsciously sought out and found that vet and his family again and lived with them for years, even helped raise their son, whose name is Roman, giving a nod to the whole thing of Namor being Roman backwards. Now they've done it the other way. And he got his memories back. Then he hooks up with Charles Xavier, who's looking for mutants and doesn't know the difference between a hybrid and a mutant, apparently, and travels with Xavier. So it's like the Xavier and Namor years.
Weird.
Right? And then Namor's like, you know, a little gruff and kind of wants to do more than just be on the search for other mutants and stuff. And his Charles's mission really isn't his to his core. But, I mean, at one point he prevents Xavier from using another mutant that they've found who has an ability to accelerate mutation. And Xavier is going to use this mutant to accelerate mutants because they're not finding a lot of mutants. And he was going to use this mutant to make other mutants, to turn people into mutants. And I'm like, does that sound familiar? It should, because it's Magneto's sinister plot in the first X-Men movie.
It is.
We all know Charlie's a bad guy. I mean, it's been well documented.
It has been. It kind of makes sense in a way.
And the family's like, we don't want Namor hanging out with this guy, but, oh, this guy's really got his hooks in Namor, and he's taken away our Namor and whatever. Namor eventually flies off the handle, and it's Xavier who puts him into the fog with the damaged memories and stuff that then sends him off to be found in the Bowery years later by Johnny Storm.
Well, so at it's least like he got such back a, there.
Yeah, I know, but what? Come on, that's lame. Issue 5, though, has so many, like, oh, wow moments that are plot-oriented that I can't really get into them without spoiling, but I'll just say that the escalations really come to a head, and the pun is intended if you've read the issue. You know, the book is worth a look if you like these characters or delving into Marvel's history and continuity. It felt to me a lot, and I think it's the Butch Geist art, because it feels like that Epting, you know, Palmer Perkins stuff.
Yeah.
In that same family of art. It reminds me of that Marvels, the Marvels Project book. That was looked back at the Angel and some of those old Golden Age heroes. Because they're dealing with some sinister, serious type concepts here, but at the same time, you're getting this kooky. Like, Namor's not Namor anymore. He's really crazy, and it's hard to accept that he's had all these years where he was well enough put together. The Byrne stuff, the him being an Avenger, etc. And, you know, this moment where Xavier messed with his mind seemed like it was resolved, I guess. But here it is, it's coming back, and that's what's making him crazy, or so Captain America thinks. So I don't know. We'll see how this plays out, but I do love me some original Human Torch, so.
Well, it's also the more gritty World War II.
Right.
As opposed to, traditionally, Marvel had some pretty goofy World War II stuff, so that's the reboot. But I'm hanging in till they solve this by bringing the Invisible Girl. Because you know we can't resist her, Steve. He'll save the surface world because of his love of Sue Storm.
Does he know she's back? That might be part of the problem.
Exactly. See, that's how they can tie it all in.
Was he invited to the Thing's wedding? I didn't get to that issue yet.
I just like you say, it's the Butch Geist artwork and the characters. It's a perfect match of artist and characters for that nostalgia, you know, Captain America, Winter Soldier kind of flashbacky feel. I think they did a good pull all the way around.
And in that last Invaders title, too, which I enjoyed quite a bit, that had the Deathlok bit in it, and it had the Mark Lamming art, you know, I like the Winter Soldier as part of the Invaders. It's just, it works so much better than Young Buck, you know? He's got this experience, he's got a role, he's one of the guys instead of the sidekick. So that's kind of cool. Cool dynamic.
Yeah. And like you say, the original Human Torch. Although, you know, he's a robot, so that name never really sat well with me.
Yeah. Jim.
He should be the original Robot Torch.
Jim. All right, why don't we end this episode with the elephant in the room, the Avengers Endgame. We can't not mention it. Since we've all seen it, and everyone on the planet has seen it, but everyone on the planet has also commented about it, so there was the end of all of these years of Marvel movie making, all comes to this big head. I loved the end battle sequence, and pretty much most of the Thanos sequences I enjoyed quite a bit. Thanos is one of my favorite characters, so I was okay with how they portrayed him and having the big battle scene at the end and seeing Thanos doing more cool stuff and kicking butt was fun. But to me, the movie, the way it was paced, was a lot of what bothered me. It felt to me like two TV episodes leading up to a movie sequence, and then maybe another TV episode at the very end after the big battle.
Huh.
It didn't feel cinematic to me, and it didn't feel like the action was paced well enough. I want to see, it's the old Bendis New Avengers complaint. I want to see these characters doing superhero-y things on the screen. We finally gotten them there. I don't want to see the actors sitting around participating in like the self-service where they think that they're the characters and that they're not playing the characters. I've become tired of the original cast, and I'm happy that this transition has taken place at this time.
I just love the gathering of the team too much, Steve. Like, if we never got to the end battle and that was the whole movie, I'm like, I would have been totally fine just goofing off for 2 hours.
We went and saw it twice. I liked it. I was on record as not really liking the first half of the... I mean, this is basically one... The last two movies are one big six-hour movie, right? Like, they split it in two, but we can all... I certainly feel like it wasn't a satisfying conclusion at the last one. And I look at this as one big movie, and I think at the time I commented, I really was unhappy with their decision to introduce the sort of death is pointless and doesn't mean anything so soon in the cinematic universe. So I think that ratcheted my expectations down for this movie, which helped.
Mm-hmm.
And I also felt it was nice to get some of the satisfying. I liked the Peggy Carter TV show and character a lot.
Yep.
So the resolution of that arc, I really enjoyed, because that was something I enjoyed those characters and those times. So even though that's, like you say, not really a movie thing so much, it's not a big set piece, it was a satisfying bit for me. And I liked that they all got together at the end. Like, it's the whole team fighting Thanos, and some of the enjoyable moments, like, I like when they're now doing that thing where they cut off villains' monologues.
Yeah.
Like, Thor just cut, you know, ends a monologue earlier. And that's the type of thing that I like. Because it plays against, well, and now it's a bit of a common thing, but it's still nice, so you never know now. Is someone really going to, you know, let him finish or end the speech early?
And seeing the combo moves in battle were fun. All that, I mean, that's what I really want to see out of these movies. I've said it before. I just need to see the Silver Surfer flying around on his board, and then it's going to be... just need to see the Ghost Rider riding up a building on his bike, leaving a flaming trail. Those moments are the things that are like, oh, man, this is really cool. And if I get a couple of those in the movie, I'm satisfied. But like I said, I would have preferred that it'd be spaced out a little differently.
And I don't care about, like, the time travel. That stuff never bothers me. Like, it's all inherently paradox. Like, people are like, oh, it doesn't make sense. And I'm like, it's time travel. It doesn't really, you know, it's not something you could say definitively, here's how it would work, because it's not something that really happens. And that's why, and I understand, look, if it bothers you, it bothers you. But I feel like it's something that's not, it's the ultimate and, like, made up sci-fi silliness, so don't kill yourself trying to place out how it works.
After enjoying the characterization of Captain Marvel in the Captain Marvel movie, I was a little bit disappointed in how she was portrayed in this flick, and how they weren't didn't stick the landing on following through on Monica Rambeau. Right?
Yes. Because
she would have been the right age now if that movie was set in the past. Much. That kind of thing. That would have been fun. But then I learned that they filmed Captain Marvel's, Brie Larson's parts for this Infinity movie before they even started production for Captain Marvel.
Okay.
So she didn't have her... She wasn't in character yet. She didn't have... No one. That's why she was personality-less. She didn't have her... She wasn't... She hadn't walked in those shoes yet, and they...
Not to cut you off, but I also feel like she's going to have more movies.
Oh, yeah.
And I know people were complaining that, like, oh, it's so much on these characters. Well, there's a good chance that they're all done with these characters, or at least for a while. So, like, let them have... She's got another movie in the... Like, she doesn't need... I mean, it would be great if they could, but they only got so much time, and I'd be pretty miffed, you know... Let RDJ and Chris Evans and these characters, this is their send-off, so they should be the focus.
You called the actors' names the characters.
Yeah. Well, they're not. But that's because they're this version of these characters. They're the movie versions.
That was Marvel's mistake.
I think it was their smart move, because let's be honest, for us, you're always going to think of, when I say Captain America... You're going to think of some artist rendering, I bet you, when I say Captain America. Yeah. I have a picture of him in my head when you say that, with like that little bit of chainmail at the top where they just have the first 10 rings and straight down. Not the Kirby one. That's not the first one that comes to mind.
Here you've got...
I'm a little bit later.
Here you've got a whole group of characters, I'll use the word again, that are perfect because they, for the most part, wear masks or... facial armor or helmets or that kind of a thing, and therefore it is built for being able to substitute in people more seamlessly, like they've done in the Batman movies over the decades, and they passed on that because Robert Downey Jr. was so what they wanted to do with Tony Stark that they made it be Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man. And then they got into this whole formula of superheroes have to have their masks off all the time. And definitely for the final battle, right? You figure out a way to yes. take your mask off and be fighting around. Everyone learns the hero's secret identities by the end of the movie every time. All the villains. That's why they seem like they have to die. They made it be the actors are... You know, you've got Scarlett Johansson being like, well, why should I have to dye my hair red? Well, because the character's hair is red. Yeah, but mine isn't, so I want it to be this color. So, all right, well, we'll just shift, and it's you now. I want to grow a beard. Well, you know, whatever. It just seems as so much self-service. I can't separate the actors now from those roles, and it makes me ready to leave it behind comfortably, I should say. I got no ill will.
Yeah, but
I'm just ready.
And I am too, but I think it was smart to tie it to those because, well, first of all, I agree with you, but movies and TV can't handle secret identities. There isn't a single one of these, I feel like, where by the end of the season, like, everyone knows, you know what I mean? Like, and yeah. I wish someone would explain to me why audiences have no problem with people that can fly through space. But the idea that someone has a double life is just not acceptable because people in the real world have double lives. You know, you find out all these guys that have secret families and stuff. So yeah. I'm always like, why can't they take this? So I don't lay that on Marvel. That's just people don't want superheroes to have secret identities. And the mask thing, I think, too, when you hire a famous person, they always seem to want to get that mask. That's the only thing that Batman movie did right. Was keep that mask on most of the time. But even there, those movies, like the Christopher Nolan ones, a lot of people found out he was Batman.
Yes.
You can't let that happen. But I think it's smart because people buy into those actors and those characters and they enjoy them and it gives that sense of like, this is really something. And it gives a sense of handoff. And I think they can still hand off. Look, James Bond survived and that dude always has his mask off, so to speak. And people still have their favorite Bond or whatever. So I think they'll be able to transition when they need to. But I think it's what built brand loyalty for people who aren't comic fans.
Yep.
We're like, oh, I like Robert Downey Jr.
Right.
And like I said, they're never going to replace. You know, when I think Iron Man, I'm going to think probably Bob Layton more than I'm going to think something out of a movie. And because they have masks and CGI and everything, I didn't think they wanted people tied to that. Because that's going to age poorly, and they're going to want to update it. So if you thought Iron Man was that first movie, well, those effects aren't as good as the ones now. I don't know. I just think the calculation was smart for a movie audience, and it worked. But like you, I'm ready. I'm kind of cool. They've wrapped those up, and now we're going to get whatever the next wave of crazy nonsense is. And presumably it'll be fun. I don't know. It'll have to stand on its own. Kevin, I feel like Steve and I have talked a lot about...
I mean, you guys are great at debating, so...
my biggest laugh in the flick was that towards the end, I mean, we know that you've probably heard by now that Thor lets himself go somewhat, right? And doesn't... he grows his long, scraggly hair and a big, bushy beard and everything. And you have the big battle at the end, and Thor kind of gets his mojo back, right? But then after... that there's a pretty long end sequence to like wrap up where the characters are now in their journey, in their story, right? And for some reason, even though Thor's got his groove back, he has kept the long, scraggly, unkempt hair and the big beard. And they show him standing over like a bluff, standing at the edge of New Asgard, and he is looking over the sea. And they show, you know, it's one of those cinematic shots where the movie pans around the back of the character's shoulders and you're looking over the shoulder at his face and his scraggly hair and his big beard and he's looking over the ocean. And I leaned over to my wife and I said, this is the moment when Thor decides that he's going to become Aquaman now. The sea is calling.
My wife was like, oh, man, because he has his sunglasses and he takes them off. And she's like, I wonder if that's a Men in Black, because the two of them are starring in the Men in Black reboot. If that's a little nod to their new franchise that they're starting off. But I like the part where he and Star-Lord at the end. I thought that's where you were going to reference. That made me laugh with the two of them. No, it's good to... And I think that by having it tied to the actors, that makes the scene with Thor and his mom more powerful. Because when you think about it, it would be very tempting to see someone who's gone. You'd want to go talk to... Like, it would be believable to forget your mission and be like, oh my God, I got to see this person that meant so much to me that I can't see anymore. Like, that was the part I thought worked on my own personal level. I was thinking, boy, it'd be cool if there was a chance to see someone that's passed. Like, it'd be hard to be focused on doing whatever you're supposed to do.
Considering the first two Thor movies, and I guess the first couple of Avengers movies as well, I think where they went with that Thor Ragnarok movie in its... in its overall texture and its the theme of it, where it was a little more lighthearted and more adventurous and more comic booky in some ways, I think it led them to be able to be a little more flexible with Thor. I think they figured out, like, man, those Thor scenes with Rocket, you know, were great in the other Avengers movie, and this stuff and pairing them up with the Guardians, and I think they found a way to use Thor off of an ensemble cast, almost making him a good buddy movie type character, you know?
I agree. I haven't seen those first two movies since I watched them way back when, but we've watched Ragnarok, I think, twice or something. So that's a more memorable, not just because it's recenter, but like I said, I know the first one was the Destroyer and the second was Dark Elves, but other than that, I can't tell you anything of those two movies, but the third one had so many. And also the colors, like, they finally went, when they go to that planet, they finally, like, hey, not everything has to be, like, black and gray.
Yep.
Like, you always say, it's a comic book, like, have some garish colors.
What do you think, Kevin?
You're always looking for the Ghost Rider going up the building or whatever, and I'm always looking for just a good movie. That's the difference between us, I think.
Yeah, those are hard to find, though.
Especially really with a superhero movie.
I've had to lower the bar, my friend, or else I wouldn't be paying $15 to go to these things.
15? Jeez. You always pay more than me.
You don't want to know
which
how much.
Which is weird when you think about it. But anyways, I thought it was a good movie. Right. But I don't think it was a great movie that would, like, reach my top five or anything. But it could grow on me. Like, some movies you go see, and you're just like, yeah, this is the best. And then after, like, all these things set in, and you're just like, oh, maybe I was too overexcited. Like, I enjoyed Infinity War more than this movie. And I wouldn't say I was disappointed by this movie, but there was a point where I was just like, this seems rather self-congratulatory. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I guess that's fine. Like, they've done 20 movies, and you're bringing everything to an end, but there's kind of something about it ending, and you're like, well, we got to go through the motions. The bad guy has to lose, and all this stuff has to be in place. And I'm like, there's an element of something new not being introduced. You're like, you're not seeing that newness. And I was just like, well, that's kind of disappointing. And I also can't detach. Like, usually I can detach myself. I'm like, oh, the comics are this, whatever. But in the back of my head, I'm just like, yeah, it'd be cool if all those cosmic dudes showed up now. We had some of that. Like, that, they constructed a whole other story.
Did you hear?
That was fine. And they had really clever moments. And a lot of people have probably seen the other movies, so the Easter eggs aren't just... Like, it's not like your second movie and you're doing, oh, look, check out all these Easter eggs. This is all about us. Like, this is an ending. So I'm like, you've earned it. But also, I'm just like, there's some weird, weird thing where I can't disconnect myself from everything.
Did you see Starlin's comment about the cosmic entities?
No.
He said that they have been very cautious and hesitant to introduce any of the abstract entities or cosmic entities. They don't think that, you know, that we can handle it, basically. The moving going audience. But Starlin's comment was, give him a couple of more Doctor Strange movies and they'll be there.
Well, it's so weird. Like, they keep on pushing the envelope with, like, Guardians or whatever and introducing more stuff. And it always works. And you always have that audience. And I'm like you have a talking raccoon, a talking tree, and still there's places you think the audience is going to be like, well, this is too crazy. Like, they just about pushed everywhere.
No talking universes. there was apparently a scene where the Living Tribunal was written into this whole Avengers Thanos thing. And they said, no, it's too three-headed judge thing. They tossed it out.
Yeah, like, I recognize there's really isn't a lot of time to introduce, like, new characters or new stuff. And they have their own story to tell, so I'm like, that's cool. Like, I'm not trying to, like, say, hey, I wanted this movie, and because that didn't happen, like it was cool in itself. But I also want to see, like, other stuff in later movies that continues to push the envelope.
Well, it certainly seems like they left the door open to have the Captain Marvel sequel to be all cosmic, because she spends so much time off planet. They could have a whole, basically make a Silver Surfer movie, which would be awesome, except it would be her instead of the guy on the surfboard. But I'm, fingers crossed, that's what they could do with that, and just have all kinds of crazy planets.
There's really no place for her on stuff. Earth, right? I mean, she's too overpowered to be on Earth.
Yeah, like, I wasn't sure if a Kree-Skrull war had already happened or will happen, or we missed. Like, there's just a lot of ground. You know, the other thing I kind of couldn't detach myself from, and this is me because I'm a con guy, with a movie that didn't really introduce anything new or you know, like the other movies, like there was so much, like, comic speculation. It's funny that this movie had probably the highest level of comic speculation compared to the amount of new things it had in it. So at some point, like, I knew, like, 30 comics, and I knew probably, like, one or two or three or whatever of these comics were going to be one of the things that was in the movie. And usually, like, it doesn't come down to that many things, but this time it did, and I'm like, I kind of wish, like, I didn't know some, like, I didn't have, like, those 30 comics in my brain, knowing that one of those was going to be in the movie before the movie. But you kind of, like, I tried to avoid some things, but you can't avoid everything when you're selling comics at the same time, so that was kind of weird. And then the weekend I would have, like, it was weird, too, because I was doing, like, the movie had come out, and then I was, like, doing a con, like the next day. So I'm like, how am I supposed to? It was awkward timing this year, and usually I don't get caught like that, too. And then they had the whole thing with the next day after the con, the theater was closed because of circumstances that, like, there was a fire or potential or whatever. So then I had to, like, wait till the next week, and I'm like, this, it was just weird timing, too. That caught me a little bit. Which I can't blame on the movie, like that.
I blame Disney, Kevin.
Of course, right? Was anyone boycotting this movie?
They could have cleared that with you. Well, I wouldn't mind. Like I said, I feel it was really part two of the first one, so...
Yeah.
And as you say, they have to wrap up all this stuff, so they don't really have a lot of room to be like, and here's the next 20 heroes.
Well, that's the thing, too. Like, it would have been funny, too, since there is, like, a time gap that I totally did not see coming. Like, they could have had, like, hey, all this stuff you missed was going on.
Yeah, we almost got out of this without mentioning the time gap. I hate time gap things. I hate that.
Yeah, it felt weird, but...
It was bad.
Well, we're going to catch up to that. Because I don't know, like, sometimes the movies are coming out and you feel like the time passing in the movies is less than what is passing in, like, our time. So now it feels like we have time to, like, catch up to, like, the movie time.
Oh, boy.
For some reason, that's the one thing I can also let go. Like, I don't mentally track, like, what year it is and what happened or whatever. Like, I know for some people that's just how their brain works, but for me, mercifully, I'm just like, something happened and then something else happened.
Well, it would always feel weird that if the Avengers disband or whatever happens in the time in between a movie, like, they wouldn't see each other for a year. So you always feel like they've had other adventures that you just didn't see, or they weren't doing anything. Like, there's always that weird thing where you would, with like movies, you gotta like turn it off. Like, okay, don't pay attention to that.
Yeah.
Like, it's a different turning off than what you need to turn off when you're reading a comic. Like, there's always certain things you just gotta accept, right?
Yeah. I mean, especially like a genre, like a superhero comic or superhero movie, there's just gonna be kind of that's how they do it.
That goes to my complaint about the pacing, too, with that 5 years later thing, is you've got this six-hour story split up into two movies, right? With a year in between them. And you've got the cliched 5 years later thing in there. You don't line that up with the movies? So, like, when we come into this movie, we felt like time has passed, and then we're getting introduced to these characters as they're meeting back up with each other after they've spent time apart from each other, and we've had this year to dwell on all the crazy stuff that happened in that first movie, and they've had this time, and they look like and are acting like they've also been dwelling on, and we see the effects on them since we last checked in with them. But no, they start the movie right when the other one ended, go and have this quick thing where they go and intervene with Thanos, and then all of a sudden you get the 5 years later or whatever. You know, it just that bothered me. It's like, why didn't you? This feels so artificial when it could have felt so natural if you just paced it out differently. You've got.
I was kind of fine with the weird intro.
The only part that, because they had that in there, I did feel bad that the Vision didn't get any kind of memorial or any kind of, like...
Oh, no.
He's the one that died, and everyone was just like...
The Black Widow doesn't even get a funeral.
I know, and I'm like, what?
She doesn't get a funeral, but she gets the moment on the gazebo, and then they get the post-Tony funeral. So she gets moments, but I don't think the Vision gets anything like that. Like, who, that robot? Who?
No,
like,
you just get that one flashback of him as Jarvis being the chauffeur.
Oh, I love that they tied in the TV series with the movie. Yes.
But I'm just a fan of that show, so that was
same here.
Fan service nonsense that I could see some people might get mad at. But
I don't think that's good fan service, because I'm like, no one, if you don't know who that is, who cares? It's just a chauffeur.
Yeah. So I liked. Yeah, I mean, look, is it perfect? No. There was no possible way to have a messy 20-year film wrapped up in any kind. And I had my slight picadillos, like I said, sad for the Vision. Didn't really understand that whole bit about how they got 2014 Thanos into the present when they didn't have any juice left. So some of that stuff did kind of linger a little bit. But, you know, you got to forget it. It's a movie.
There's also many interviews and things online if you want to know how things work, or if there's things you couldn't fill in the gaps for. And I actually went to go check some. I wasn't going to originally, but then I started commenting stuff. And then, of course, you know, Dan the Leaf Insect Man, he's like, well, there's this interview. And I'm like, fine, I'll go read this interview. And then I'm like, oh, that's cool. Because there's certain things you're like, well, what about? And then you're like, oh, okay. Okay, that works. That fits.
Well, with that in mind, I think I have some online reading to do. Let's see what these Russos had in mind.
Yeah.
All right, guys, let's make that another episode of Marvel Noise. Thanks for joining us and hearing us shoot off our recent reads and thoughts on the Avengers Endgame movie. Next episode, we will convene again, assemble, if you will, and have some more Marvel-related content for yous.
Is this the one with the super-secret new project?
That's entirely up to you. We'll see. All right. until Namor's ankle wings are revealed to be proof that he's really native to Angela's heaven, make mine Marvel. Later.
I thought you were going to say Namor's wings prove that he's the angel's dad.
Wow. You guys really went for it this time.
Stronger than a whale, he can swim anywhere.
He can breathe underwater and go flying through the air.
For Namor of Atlantis is the prince of the deep.
An atmosphere of gloom pervades the fabled city of Atlantis, for within the palace royal, its monarch, Prince Namor the First, lies ill.
Still the fever rages. My Lord Vashti, there must be more we can do.
Our court physician is doing all that can be done, Lady Dorma. We can do naught but wait. The drug I have given him will induce deep sleep until the fever abates. I would prescribe rest for you too, my lady.
No. I must be near to heed him should he awaken.
Very well. We shall prepare a couch for you within this chamber. I beseech thee, try to rest.
Exhausted from many sleepless hours, the Lady Dorma soon falls into deep slumber, unaware that her prince is gone. While many leagues away, the figure of the mighty submariner streaks surfaceward, and in the dark hours of the surface world's night, soon emerges from the sea.
My head spins, and my limbs are weak, yet some powerful compulsion drives me on. There is something here that I must find. I must...
And as night dissolves into morning...
Hey, buddy, there's a law about sleeping on the beach. Come on your feet. What's your name, and where do you live?
I cannot remember.
A trip to the station might refresh your memory.
Unhand me, no one touches my person.
And nobody strikes an officer of the law. You're under arrest.
Think you your puny weapons can frighten me?
Brother, that does it. I'll book you for... Hey, what the... Come back here! I don't believe it. I just don't believe it. I tell you, Captain, the guy had wings on his feet. He just up and flew away.
Yes, that's him, all right.
Him?
Who? The Submariner. I wonder what brought him back to the surface.
You mean he came out of the sea?
That's right, and he has little love for surface people. There's no telling what he's up to. But you can be sure it's no good. Put out an all-points bulletin for Namor, the Submariner.
I know not who I am, nor where I am. But I do know that I am in a world unfriendly to me. And somewhere in this alien world is what I seek. But what? And where?
At last... He has returned. My chance has come. Ah, Freddy and George, I have a most important job for you.
The Submariner is back?
Quite correct. And you must find him before the police do.
How'll we recognize him?
It would be very difficult to make a mistake. However, to erase any doubt, study this picture.
I see what you mean.
Remember, whatever happens, you must not fail.
If he's out there, we'll find him.
My head, it throbs like the restless tides. And though this compulsion grows stronger, I still know not what it is that I seek.
It's him, the Submariner! Captain
Barnes! I must elude them. But if I fly, they will follow. I shall take my chances in here. I must keep out of sight.
The Submariner has been sighted on a rooftop at 5th and Clover. Police are on the way. We ask all citizens to stay clear of the area.
Step on it, George. We've got to get there first.
a cordon around the building and don't let anyone in or out.
Quickly, before we're spotted. We're in, but once we get the Submariner, how do we get out?
I'll show you.
You say you saw the Submariner flying toward Central Park?
That's right. He flew out of a window just before the police arrived.
Who's calling?
Just call me Red Herring.
Flying toward Central Park. Well, it could be a wild goose chase, but we can't afford to take a chance.
It worked. Now to find our elusive Submariner.
Still, the enemy hovers above. My only escape is through this accursed building. It is too quiet. I sense a presence of danger.
Ah, at last we meet, and you will not escape us.
What new menace faces the mighty Submariner now?
Only we can get you out of here safely. So if you're smart, you'll come along quietly.
I'll not comply with your demand.
Then we'll be compelled to take you by force. Take him, George.
I've met up with a lot of punches in my day, but never one like that.
I'm more concerned with what Mrs. B will say than with your pugilistic career.
How could you be so careless? Did you really think you could take the Submariner by force?
You briefed us that he was strong.
But you didn't tell us how strong.
My one consolation is that the police do not have him either. I will give you another chance. But this time, use your heads.
We've combed every inch, Captain. He's nowhere in the area.
Something tells me we've been duped. But he's somewhere in this city, and I'll find him if it's the last thing I do.
What mysterious force urges me on? I must not stop, yet my limbs grow weak. I must find water, for only that will restore my waning strength.
In this folder is every speck of information we have concerning the Submariner. Somewhere in here there must be a clue as to why he's here and where he might go.
A guy just doesn't walk around New York with wings on his feet and not be seen. I still think he headed back to sea.
That's it! Sooner or later, he must find water. Even though he is part human, he must replenish his strength every so often with water. I want every source of water in the city patrolled. The East River, the waterfront, and keep a sharp eye on the fire hydrants.
Talk's cheap, Barney. What would you do if you really saw the Submariner?
I'll tell you what I'd do. I'd clip his wings, that's what.
Well, if I'm seeing right, you just might get the chance. Look over there.
The sea. The life-giving sea. I must reach it.
I'll bet there's a nice fat reward out for him.
What are we waiting for?
The sea. I must reach the sea.
If you're thinking about taking a swim, forget it.
Stand back, you rabble.
Get him, fellas.
Even with my feeble strength, you're no match for me.
There he is. Surround him. Stop, or we'll shoot.
He's getting away.
I have not the strength to fly farther. I must not give up till I find what I seek. But without water, I cannot pursue my quest.
Don't tell me you failed again.
I promise you we've left no stone unturned. But there is no sign of the Submariner.
And he can't have gone back to the sea because the police have every inch of waterfront covered.
Of course. Why didn't I think of that? Without water, he cannot live, which makes finding him even more urgent.
They've even covered the fountain in Rockefeller Plaza.
Ah, but there is one place that would be most natural to him.
The aquarium. We forgot the aquarium.
With all those fish?
Why not? He's certainly used to them. Get me a squad car and fast.
Oh,
I feel the strength returning. The life-giving force of the seawater surges through my veins again. Only moments more, my friends, and I shall be able to...
We have you! There's no way out.
How are we going to get him out of there?
Same as we would any creature of the sea. With a net. There are times I wish I'd taken up another career.
We're too late. They have him.
Now, what do we tell Mrs. B?
There is still a way.
Why? What am I doing here?
For one thing, assault on an officer of the law, namely me.
You mean I am imprisoned?
These two gentlemen have put up your bail.
Is Namor at last at the mercy of the two emissaries of Mrs. B?
These are not my friends.
Anyone who puts up $5,000 bail is a friend.
What do you want of me?
The money came from a lady who's very anxious to speak with you.
How do I know this is not a trap?
Well, you have only my word. And the promise of the lady that once you've seen her, you'll be free to go.
Very well. But should you think to deceive me?
Oh, no. Say no more. I recall our last encounter only too well.
At last, he is here.
Go in. She's waiting.
Welcome, Namor.
Why do you call me Namor?
Don't you know your own name?
I know only that a strange compulsion has driven me on. And though I have reached the end, I still know not what I was seeking.
Perhaps I do. Listen well, Namor. For what I am about to tell you may decide your destiny. It began many years ago, near the South Pole. A young captain aboard an icebreaker ship gave an order that was to determine your fate.
Depth charges in place, sir. Good. Fire away.
Little did he suspect that an age-old civilization many fathoms below would be rocked by that explosion.
'Tis the surface men who are responsible. I shall order a force to go above and investigate.
No, Father. To send a force would mean bloodshed. Let me go.
And though the king resisted, the strong-willed Princess Fen had her way. Reaching the Oracle, she climbed aboard the silent ship.
Oh! Who are you?
Now look what I found, Captain. Where did you come from?
She's having trouble breathing.
She fainted. Get some water, quickly.
Revived by the water, the beautiful princess looked deep into the eyes of the young captain, and both fell hopelessly in love. And so, the two races, separated for countless ages, were united once more.
Until death do us part.
Weeks later, the king, concerned about his daughter's prolonged absence, dispatched a war party to rescue the princess.
Captain, we're being attacked!
And so the heartbroken princess returned to Atlantis to bear a son, then die of a broken heart. And you, Namor, are the child of that tragic marriage.
But how could you know all this?
Because that young captain was my son. Look at me, Namor, and you will know I speak the truth.
I believe you, and I pay you homage.
It is not homage that I want. It is to give you your surface heritage. Stay here with me. You shall inherit all my wealth.
You are most generous, but I too have wealth. The wealth of the people who love me, and the love of Lady Dormer.
Lady Dormer?
Without her, I could not live. And she would surely die, as my mother did, if I do not return.
I see. I have been wrong. Instead of giving you your heritage, I would be denying you the right to live and love as you choose. Return to Atlantis, my son. I shall help you. Freddy, find a suit of clothes for Namor, and see that my yacht is ready to sail as soon as it is dark.
Police.
Freddy will handle him.
Evening, officer. Any sign of the Submariner?
Not a nibble. Say, who's that?
Why, that's Mrs. B and her grandson. And I'd better catch up with them.
Goodbye, Namor. The memory of these few hours will last me the rest of my life.
And I have learned that I can be proud of my surface heritage.
And as Namor streaks homeward, there is one in Atlantis who watches and waits.
Dormer.
Namor, you did return to me.
Yes. And here will I stay forever.
Stronger than a whale, he can swim anywhere. He can breathe underwater and go flying through the air.
The Namor of Atlantis is the prince of the deep.